Hello, fellow Rebel Capitals. Hope you're well. Just waiting for Mr. Jim Bianco. So I thought that I would go ahead and start the live stream and go into this epic Twitter thread that we were talking about earlier about how the Scariant will most likely impact global economies and kind of the political narrative out there and what these authoritarians may continue to do in the future. And this draconian approach that we've been seeing lately, to say the least. So let's get into this tweet right off the bat. I'm going to go over to Twitter. So this is from Jim, December 5th. He says, a longish tweet thread to highlight where I think we are with the Scariant and why I'm worried about its implications for markets and the economy. He says, this is about the way I see it, not what I want. So then he goes into the U.S. reported over 61,000 cases. And if you say, oh, Jim, it doesn't matter about cases. It really only matters about the two other metrics, hospitalizations and fatalities. He acknowledges that. It's just his point here, and you'll see this later on down in the thread, is that the politicians are making their decisions or taking their cues from the global elite. And they're using the cases as some sort of metric for what their policies will be in the present and in the future, just like we saw with Colombia, like we've seen in Australia, like we've seen in Germany, Austria, etc. So that's why he's pointing that out. He says the data has a strong day of the week pattern. The Y day was the most amount of Saturday cases in 3 months. Worrisome. Oh, yesterday. Okay. The 7 day average is up 65%. Maybe distorted because of Thanksgiving. But as the top panel shows, U.S. cases are skyrocketing. And hopefully you can see this chart from Jim, and this bottom one is where he's talking about the cases skyrocketing. Then he goes on to say, my long-held concern is when one of these regions spikes, the other follows. This looks more and more the cases in the last few days. Restated history suggests the U.S. will follow Europe to new highs or close to it. And again, he's talking about the infections or the cases. This is the 7 day average. And that is an interesting chart, isn't it? I did not realize there was such a strong correlation between what Europe does. We basically do, what is it, maybe 2 or 3 months later. Yeah. And this, you can see the case count going up, skyrocketing really in Europe. And this is the justification that they're giving us for all of these, not just lockdowns, but restrictions. And obviously the mandates we've been talking about on this video, how they are forcing people to get the medicine. And in Germany's case, they're really not allowing them to do anything other than go to the grocery store occasionally. Chart with some new data, the percentage of the country has gotten a booster, 12.75 red, 14.89 as of percentage of population eligible, over 12-year-old green. So, and he goes on to say the total percentage of population fully medicated, blue, over 12-year. Okay, but then again, how is the mainstream media defining fully medicated? Because this is a medication where the efficacy fades after, you know, in some cases, 2 months when you're talking about the one brand in particular. But it's well known that 4 or 5 months, it starts to fade. And then 6 months, it's faded to the degree in which you're pretty much like starting from scratch in a lot of different metrics, but to the extent that they would suggest that you have to get this booster. So if the efficacy did not fade, then there wouldn't be a requirement for a booster. And there again, if that efficacy fades, how do you define that? Is some, even though someone's had two doses of the medicine, are they fully medicated after 3 months with J&J or after 6 months with some of the others? If you want to be intellectually honest about it, the answer would be no. So recall my belief that the policy has driven these politicians to panic about the cases. So here's where he goes into this view, where when we're looking at this strictly from a standpoint of policy, it's really not about the fatalities or the hospitalizations when it's convenient for them. You see, when it's convenient for them to talk about states like Florida and whatnot, then they'll totally ignore the cases and they'll focus strictly on the hospital capacity, let's say. But when they're trying to push some other authoritarian measure, and it's not convenient to talk about things other than cases, then they just sweep that under the rug. But his main point here, last week, New York City said three people tested positive for the scariant. So de Blasio, and we did that story yesterday, just, I don't know if he went into panic mode, but he went into dictator, totalitarian, authoritarian mode, where he, looks like he made a mandate for religious and private schools. Wow, that's, de Blasio is, he's right on par with that guy in Australia that just pretty much went ballistic on the medicated and unmedicated, that if you're against mandates, that you are anti-medicine. And he was just basically sweating. He was so pissed off and he had smoke coming out of his ears. I can't remember the guy's name, but he's basically, or de Blasio is basically our version of that guy. And then Jim goes into Australia here. So notice Australia has these internment camps where thousands of Aussies just suspected of having the cervasive sickness are forcibly held without rights and subject to a $5,000 Aussie dollar fine if they so much as raise their voice to the jailers about their plight. So just to be clear here, this is for people who have not only tested positive, but people who were in close proximity or close contacts, is I think how they describe it. So again, the point he's making is this is the degree to which politicians, or the extent to which they're, I don't want to use the word, the phrase freaking out, but they're, this is what they're using as ammunition to further this authoritarian approach, to take away more of your freedom, more of your liberty, and to usurp more power and control to micromanage your life. They're using this scariant and they're using this case rate, so we've got to pay attention to it. So Jim says that he worries when U.S. cases skyrocket, assuming they do, going back to that chart of Europe, we will have economic restrictions. And he says, don't dare call them lockdowns. It's going to be like QE, right? This isn't QE, or this isn't a lockdown because fill in the blank. Yeah, I'm sure that's what we'll get to here in the United States. But the bottom line is, whatever they do, this will impair the economy, creating even more inflation. Well, it will impair the economy, definitely creating an environment where there are fewer goods and services being created, less productivity, and economic output and activity will go down. What that does to the price of stocks or the price of the stuff you buy at the grocery store, I think that's a question. The probability in my mind is higher that the prices go up at the grocery store than at the stock market. But the underlying condition that I think we should pay most attention to is the fact that the economy will be impaired. The economic output will go down. Economic activity will go down as a result, even if it's something other than lockdowns. As an example, with these mandates that de Blasio is starting to enforce, where he's saying that regardless of what size of a business you have, you could have two employees. And if you are in New York City, you have to fire those employees if they choose not to get the medicine. Doesn't matter if they've had the cervasis sickness in the past. Doesn't matter if they have natural immunity. Doesn't matter if they have an underlying condition. And I haven't read this exactly, but I don't even think he's allowing for religious exemptions. I mean, this is complete totalitarianism. It is just ruling by decree. And it's just straight dictator 101, what he's doing there. But Jim's point is this is most likely going to increase if we see the cases of the scariant increase to the degree of which we've seen in Europe. So under restrictions, ordering Amazon boxes is as easy as not under restrictions. Jim!
George!
All right.
I got it in three easy steps, George.
Well, not so easy this time. Probably yeah. Three hard steps. Sorry about that, man. I think we accidentally sent you the wrong link or something, but you're in now. So You're on live. So what I want to do is I'm at about seven, the seventh tweet of that thread you put out the other day, that 15 part thread. So I think I've explained it pretty well. Maybe we'll start at one summarize very quickly to make sure that I articulated your thoughts accurately. And then we'll go on from 7 through 15. And then at the end here, we'll take a couple callers live to ask you questions directly. So let's go back over to that thread. Just a quick summary. Basically, you're saying that you think the, we'll call it the variant, the cases are going to increase significantly in the United States based on what has happened in Europe in the past, where we kind of lag them by, let's call it a month to 3 months. And therefore these politicians, they're going to ignore maybe the metrics that really matter, such as hospitalizations. They're going to focus on the case rate because that allows them to do what they want to do to become more draconian, more authoritarian, usurp more power control, et cetera. This is what we see happening in Australia. Therefore, if the cases continue to go up in the United States like we've seen in Europe, you think their policies will continue, these policies that destroy the economy even further. So that's kind of what you're projecting. Do I have it right so far?
You have it right. If I was to put a little bit of color into that.
Yeah.
We're talking about cases that started 2 months ago. So this is not really about Omicron. It's about Delta. So we're talking about Delta cases that are raging in Europe and Delta cases that are coming to the United States. Omicron could add to that. But it's more about Delta. Second of all, you're right. Show me an instance in a major Democratic country where they said, cases are up, but you're good. Just exercise caution. They throw you in jail in Australia. They are forcing everybody down to 5 years old to get vaccinated in New York City in order to even go to a restaurant. All of these are restrictions. Don't call them lockdowns. Just call them restrictions. But that's essentially what they've done. Like I said, I hear this all the time on social media. Oh, they won't do this because the public hates it. No. The public that elects progressive politicians want this, and they've always wanted this, and that's why we get this over and over again.
Yeah, and one other kind of nuance I pointed out, I think in one of the above tweets, you're saying that these further restrictions will decrease economic activity, therefore increase most likely the rate of consumer price inflation. But what I really wanted to highlight is whether you are someone like Snyder or Dr. Lacey Hunt that may be in the disinflation camp, or maybe someone like yourself that sees this as more inflationary in terms of consumer prices. The one thing that everyone agrees on is that if we have more of these lockdowns, if we have this mandate like de Blasio put out, where he's forcing all businesses, not just the ones with over 100 employees, but all businesses to fire every single person that refuses to get the, we'll call it the medicine here, then that is
serum.
Less economic.
Untested serum.
Yeah, that is lower economic activity. That is a reduction in the amount of goods and services an economy is producing, regardless of what you think that will do to prices.
Yeah, so let me put some color on that too. In another tweet thread, I've pointed out, this was a few days earlier, if you look at the levels of consumption, the levels of retail sales, and I'm talking about durable goods consumption, stuff, not services.
Yep.
We're at records right now. We are, or you know, or if you want to put it in the vernacular, we are ordering Amazon boxes like we never have. Now, why? We sat at home for a year and didn't spend any money in 2020. We mailed out multiple levels of stimulus checks, and the Fed has been printing money, goosing financial assets to give everybody unrealized gains. Well, they're finally doing something with this stuff. They're buying things, and we're buying things at records. Not good, not above average, record. And we have a supply chain problem because we cannot produce the stuff fast enough or ship it fast enough relative to the level of orders we're getting. We need people to work in the supply chain and in production. You even take 2 or 3 or 4% of the workforce out because they're not being vaccinated, you're going to have an even bigger supply squeeze, and you're going to have an and how do you fix too much demand, not enough supply? You raise your prices. You raise your prices until to allocate a scarce resource until demand cools off. So I'm in the camp. We're going to see more inflation sooner, like in the next year or so. Maybe in 2 or 3 years, that could be bad enough to cause a recession. And then I might be in the disinflation camp. But that's a secondary effect. Primary effect right now is this demand. And the last thing I'll say about this is we can all order this stuff off of our phone or at home. So go ahead and lock everybody down. Amazon still works. I'm not going to slow down my ordering, but if there's not enough truckers out there to deliver it, I'm not going to get it unless, and then what's Amazon going to do when they've got 12 orders for 8 things? They're going to raise their price to see which 8 people get it.
Right. And that's going to increase our trade deficit. I mean, we've seen it go, correct me if I'm
wrong. It's already a record.
We've seen it go from $40 billion a month to $80. And what you're, if this plays out, what you're saying, we're going to see it go to $100.
Right. Absolutely. In fact, I think it is already near 100 total trade deficit. But if you take out crude oil, you're more than, I think that's that 80 number you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. So this is, now we're at this tweet number 8, where you say under restrictions, ordering Amazon boxes is easy as not under the restrictions. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So we just talked about that. And then that subtweet in there is where I explain we're at record demand. You know, we're buying stuff like we've never seen before.
Right.
That's why if I was to throw in one nuance, in that subtweet I talked about, I don't like the word bottleneck to describe the supply chain, because while that's technically correct that we have a bottleneck, it implies a blockage to preventing it from being at its potential. I think the better word is capacity constrained. The supply chain's running at 100%. We want it to run faster.
Yeah, right.
It can, over time, get up faster, but not immediately. And if you're going to give people incentives to not gather in large groups, it's too dangerous to go to a restaurant with your family. But we want you tomorrow morning to show up in the factory with 500 other people to make stuff. It ain't going to work that way. If it's too dangerous to go to the restaurant, it's too dangerous to go to the factory as well, too. And then we're going to have a supply constraint that's even bigger.
Yeah. And I look at it as though, okay, the government created these economic distortions in the first place, which led to the shortages and the supply chain disruptions or the capacity issues, let's say. And so the only way high prices cure high prices is if the free market allows the supply to come back online to match up with demand. But if the politicians are doing the exact same or just doubling down on the policies that got us here in the first place, you know, I think that all of a sudden now the cure for high prices are no longer high prices. And from a standpoint of the supply won't solve the problem. The only thing that can solve the problem is fewer people getting the limited supply of stuff we actually have at a higher price.
Yeah, they'll start rationing. But what you know, and then it's the 70s gas line. Doesn't matter if you have money.
Right.
It's your license plate is an odd one, or your license plate is an even one, and you get gas on those days and you don't get gas on the other day, which is the way they did it in the 70s. So then they would ration. But what I also fear that they might do is all these restrictions come, and then the economy appears to be, you know, slowing, and prices appear to be rising. And this is exactly what France did last month. Oh, petrol prices are rising and people are complaining they can't afford it. So we'll mail them some money to pay for gas. What do you think the price is going to do now? It's going to keep going up is what it's going to be doing. Yeah. And so I think we're going to do the same thing too. If the economy starts to slow, what our answer is going to be is mail more money. We've done three levels of stimulus checks. Let's do a fourth. Okay. Well, if Amazon's going to keep raising prices, or more technically the suppliers to Amazon raise prices, and we just keep demanding the stuff at the same level, those prices will keep going higher.
Do you think we'll see price controls?
I hope not. I'm not so sure. I say I'm hope not because they don't work. They didn't work in the 70s when we tried wage and price controls. They do just create a black market. But in this era of control, that politicians love control, that's another control factor that, you might consider.
Yeah. I want to share one chart with the viewers. And Jim, let me know if you've seen this one. I actually got this, or Joseph Wang, a Fed guy on Twitter, introduced me to this when I was interviewing the other day. This is kind of just a breakdown, a further nuanced look at M2 money supply. And so household. So this is basically the amount of dollars that are in the checking deposits of households in aggregate total in the United States. And, when we hear stimmy checks and PPP, we're like, okay, yeah, I get it, but that's kind of old news and it's not really happening anymore. But people don't realize the level at which the dollars on the balance sheet of Americans actually increased. They don't really get it, I don't think. So just to put that, to quantify it, at the end of 2019, we're about $1.2 trillion. And then today, the last measurement we got was $3.6 trillion. So an increase of $2.4 trillion in the checking accounts of Americans in aggregate total.
Yeah, and there's another breakdown of that data that goes even finer, and it breaks it down by the upper 1%, 1 through 9%. We're talking about wealth, the top, the other 40% and the bottom 50. And the top 10% in wealth is 2/3 of that number right now. So where did a lot of that money come from?
PPP, right?
Yeah, PPP. I think unrealized gains. I also think that a lot of people at the wealthy end of this scale didn't spend a lot of money in 2020 as well, too. Keep in mind this. This was a pre-pandemic statistic. If you have a 1% shopper, so a woman in the 1% at the mall, she will spend 12x more than somebody in the bottom 50%. So so a lot of spending is really stacked up among the wealthy, and they are flush with cash right now. And that's part of the reason why I think we're seeing a lot of spending on durable goods, exploding higher over the last 6 or 9 months.
That makes sense. Okay, let's go to the next. We went to the sub tweet here. Yeah. So we've explained that durable goods consumption. Now let's go down to 9 of 15. So now we're back to the vaccination chart.
Yeah. So there is good statistics on vaccinations. The data I use comes from Bloomberg. They aggregate it from all of the state and the local websites as well too, and it shows that in the United States, the blue line basically shows that 60% of the American public has gotten fully vaccinated, whether it's the one shot Johnson & Johnson or the two shots. 71% if you count over the age of 12. I know they recently approved it for under 5, but that's just in the last week or two. So, yep. But it's been 12 and above since June. So it's about 71%. And the bottom of that chart, they've just started releasing data on the number of people that have gotten a booster. It is about 12% of the overall country, or around 15% of the country has gotten a booster as well, too.
Okay.
So that's what that chart shows.
All right. And next we're going to the way a panicky politician will look at it is only 35% of the population has gotten a booster.
Right. Now what this is that if you're fully vaccinated, it's supposed to last for 6 months and then you're supposed to get a booster. So question, how many people have been fully vaccinated? Because we get the data daily. How many people have been fully vaccinated? So since June 6th through today have gotten fully vaccinated plus the 15% of people that have gotten the booster. And the answer is it's only 35% of the population. Furthermore, I put out a subsequent tweet after this with a chart showing that the percentage of people that are fully protected, either gotten fully vaccinated in the last 6 months or got a booster, is going down. The public is, in other words, every day more people are expiring their 6 month anniversary from their vaccination is being hit than are being boosted. So the number's falling, and 35% is the lowest number we've seen in a year. So basically, two thirds of the country are not protected. Now, keep in mind what I said about this. I'm looking at this from the perspective of a panicky politician.
Right.
One third of the country can handle this. One third of the country has been boosted or fully vaxxed in the last 6 months. Two thirds of the country is at risk.
Right.
So what do? We have to protect the two thirds of the country that's at risk. How are we going to do that? The first thing we're going to tell them is what de Blasio announced yesterday. Everybody that can fog a mirror in New York has to get vaccinated or you lose your job.
But here's the disconnect I have with that, Jim, and maybe you can give me some insight. To your point, the politicians aren't defining fully vaccinated at all because they're just saying you could have gotten the two jabs a year ago. You could have gotten it 10 years ago if you would have had it back then. And according to what de Blasio's rules are, you would still be considered okay. You can go into restaurants. You can go, although you have none of the benefits anymore. So my point is this just proves, and I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but this just proves that these political policies have real, at the end of the day, really have nothing to do with health and they have nothing to do with science.
Oh, I absolutely agree. They have nothing to do with health and nothing to do with science because where is that second card that we have in the country called natural immunity? It doesn't exist, right? how about a card that says, here's the date I got COVID. I recovered from it. Hey, I'm better than your stupid vaccine. I have natural immunity. We don't count that at all right now. And there's a significant portion of the population, something like 70 million people have recovered from COVID. That's a good 20-ish percent of the population has recovered from COVID. Now, we don't know how many of those people have also gotten vaccinated as well, too. If you were really into the science, you would have a second card, which is you are naturally immune. But we don't even consider that to be something. So it sounds like it's something more sinister, like it's more about control.
Yeah. So sorry for going off on a tangent there. I just wanted to make that point. But your main the main takeaway from what you were saying is that these panicky politicians, to use your word, regardless of what their motives are, they're going to see this as only 35% of the population at most are adequately medicated. And therefore, we need to implement even more draconian measures, maybe even more draconian than we saw in 2020.
Right. Now, keep in mind how this is going to work. The first, they're going to push the idea of a mask. And yesterday in Oregon, they're actually proposing the idea of a permanent mask mandate. Permanent mask mandate. They're going to push masks. They're going to push vaccines. And if you live in a progressive area, I do. I live in downtown Chicago, and you go to a Starbucks and don't put on a mask and walk in and watch what happens. Boy, oh boy, they think, there's no difference between me walking in with a mask or walking in with a gun. They're trying to treat you the same. They treat you the same way, both ways as well, too. So understand that in the progressive side of the aisle, they want this. They want this control. They want the masks. They want mask vaccine mandates and the like. And so they're pushing this among the politicians that they have that they have voted for. So yeah, it's all about control. And then of course we had the egregious example over the weekend of control. Ardern, the prime minister of New Zealand, basically giving everybody permission to use the bathroom at somebody's house when they're visiting them. I guess that New Zealand can control the bowel movements of its population, and they're now giving them more permission on when they can actually have one as well too.
It's just the insanity. You know, I always tell people on the channel, I say every night I go to bed and I say, you know what? The good news is it can't get any worse. And then I wake up the next morning and look at the news.
Right. Right. But, I mean, I could give you example after example. By the way, if you read the New York Times, if you watch this coverage of this, what state is the state that they say is the irresponsible, reckless state?
Florida.
What state, by the way, in cases per 100,000 is the lowest in the country today? Florida. It's actually got the lowest case count in the country. What state has the highest? And is at an all-time record for that state? Michigan. Michigan is at 100 cases per 100,000. That's 0.1%. Florida's at 8. Michigan is 12x what Florida was. Does anybody ask Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, why are you the worst state in the country? Why are your cases at an all-time high? Are you going to suspend the Michigan-Ohio State game? That's 105,000 people in a stadium. How about the Lions? Oh, the Lions have only won one game. That's an indoor stadium with 65,000 people. Maybe we should stop having people go to those games. Never comes up. But you know what? We continue to ask those questions about Florida, even though they are dead last in the number of cases that they have. If there isn't any kind of a political bias there, I don't know what is.
Yeah, very great point. I didn't realize that about Michigan. So moving on, Jim, to 11 of 15. Now you could ask about, okay, we talked about natural immunity, hospital rates, even free choice. All you're doing is showing you cannot think like a panicky politician.
Yeah, so basically what this was about was when I sent this tweet, every time when I send these tweets out about what's going on with cases, I get these people coming back about natural immunity, hospitalizations, treatments, you know, it's this and this. Yeah, fatality rates. It's not so bad. It's not so bad. I'm like, that's not the way that this, that is not the way that case, that policy is made. Every time an announcement is made, yesterday with de Blasio, yesterday he said, everybody's got to get vaxxed in New York City. What was his rationale? Because it's winter. He said COVID cases are going to rise. I think they know they're going to rise. And so therefore, we got to get ahead of it. He didn't talk about hospitalizations. He didn't talk about treatments. He didn't talk about natural immunity or free choice. It's all about reacting to cases. That's all they do. So like I said, yes, hospitalizations and all that other, and death rates and treatments are what you and I consider when we decide how risky it is for us to go out into crowds. But politicians making economic policies only make it panic on cases. When cases go up, they slam the door shut. When cases go down, they're very slow to open the door.
Yeah. And then when cases go down, which they would have otherwise naturally, then the politician can take a victory lap.
But yeah, exactly. And by the way, there's a good argument to be made. You know, just going back to my previous comment, Michigan is number one, Florida is last. Now, why might that be? Because actually, who's close to Michigan is Wisconsin and Minnesota and North and South Dakota and New Hampshire and Vermont. It's very cold. It's December. And what is very close with Florida is Alabama and Mississippi, the SEC country down there. The states are, it's very pleasant to be outside. What was the opposite in June? It was hot and oppressive in the South, and you went inside where you went inside with air conditioning, and it was very pleasant in June and July, in the northern Midwest. And so that's when the cases went up. So you could actually make a case that these cases are highly seasonal around weather patterns on whether or not we live inside or we live outside.
Yeah. So the solution for that is just to lock everyone in their house where they're actually, there's a higher probability that they transmit it in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Just like just like the insanity of the Australia thing. You know, we've got internment camps in Australia. What are we going to do? We're going to take the most vulnerable people, people that have not been vaccinated or people that we suspect might have the cases, and do what with them? Jam them all together. Them all together so they could get all, they could get everybody, could get everybody else sick. Actually, what you want to do is you want to say you should be in the population of the vaccinated wearing masks, because that's where you're the safest. You're not the safest with other people that might have been exposed or might be unvaccinated. So if you want to follow the science, you're doing exactly the wrong thing with an internment camp. If anything, you should put the people that are vaccinated in internment camps to keep them away from the unvaccinated.
Yeah, it's pretzel logic at a global level is really what we're dealing with here. And this is, I think, the next one, 1215, you discuss Australia specifically. And they consider any of this when they used the might of the state to forcibly detain. Yeah, you're talking about that. So I guess the next question, I think you're alluding to this, is so if U.S. cases skyrocket, why should we not expect U.S. politicians to do the same thing they've done in Australia?
Last week, Jim Cramer demanded that they use the military to force everybody to get vaccinated. That sounds like what Australia's use.
Yeah, that was insane. Yeah, wow. Mm-hmm. I could not believe that when I saw that clip. That was still rather disturbing. But okay, moving on here. 13, remember WHCOS.
White House Chief of Staff, okay. Ron Klain.
Okay. So he's using this pretzel logic we talked about earlier, where he's saying that it's better for people to, or they're trying to take these draconian measures to people keep people locked in. Is that what they're saying?
Basically, that was a response when he wrote Nope. Greg Ip of the Wall Street Journal early last week, wrote a piece which to you and me might sound perfectly logical. The states that have the most restrictions are seeing the slowest economic growth and the slowest job creation. And the states that have less restrictions, like Florida, are seeing faster growth and faster job growth. Now, and that does cut politically. The states with less restrictions tend to be red, Republican, and the states with more restrictions tend to be blue. So he made that point that restrictions hurt the economy. To me, it was an obvious statement.
I'm reading what he's saying now, Jim. That's why I'm shaking my head, because this is just...
Stronger wow. COVID measures produce stronger... Yes, so here's what we're going to do when the economy... When the economy slows down, you know how we're going to speed it up? Everybody go home and don't leave your house.
And don't do
anything.
That's
how we're going to speed up. Yeah, don't do anything. That's how we're going to speed up the economy. How'd that work in the second quarter of last year? I thought we had a minus 20% growth rate.
Well, Jim, time out. I mean, maybe that's the solution to all of our problems. I mean, to solve the economic woes. In fact, to have the global economy boom like we've never seen it boom before, we should just have every person stay home and not go to work.
Oh, I know. I know, exactly. Exactly. And we'll mail them money and we'll give them free Amazon accounts. And we'll send everybody a PlayStation too.
And then what he says here in his rationale is that why have jobs growth, economic activity are up this year significantly over last year? And I'm assuming he's talking about, in the states which have stronger measures, and that's because they destroyed their economy, that they're coming up from a much lower baseline. So of course you'd expect to see those results improved. Because
yeah, we had much bigger restrictions a year ago. We were using the word lockdown. That's why I use the word restrictions. We're not in lockdown. That's why things are getting better. It's because we opened up the economy this year relative to 2020. It has nothing to do with anything else. So the Prime Minister of the United States, Ron Klain, a lot of people think he is the Prime Minister. He runs the country because he's the White House Chief of Staff. Is basically telling you they think lockdown, they think restrictions when COVID cases rise is a good idea.
Yeah, not only a good idea, but better for the economy. Like somehow we'll get an economic boom as a result of that, even though it's just this fallacy of confusing correlation or causation for correlation.
Well, that's what politicians always do. Look, I mean, we saw on Monday, yesterday, or I'm sorry, Friday. I got to get my dates right. Friday. Biden came out on Friday and said, hey, look at this. The price of gasoline is down because I released the SPR. Oh, really, Joe? You might not have anything to do with Omicron scaring the shit out of everybody that the economy is going to tank. And that's why, you know, if you wreck the economy, you could come out and say, I know you lost your job and everything's gone to hell. But hey, look at those gas prices you're getting here because of everything.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now we got 14. Just this morning, Fauci is out again, literally bragging that he panicked last week when the Omicron became a thing, slapped travel restrictions, only now just thinking about unpanicking, but giving no hard date when he will actually do that. Okay, so what was this exactly, Jim?
So this was, I wrote this Sunday, and he went on the Sunday morning talk shows, and Fauci was asked, why did they slap on travel bans for a bunch of African countries after Omicron was discovered? And he said, because we didn't know what was going on. We didn't understand anything. Okay, that's to me, sounds like a panic. Oh my God, there's a new virus. Shut it all down. You can't fly back from South Africa or anything like that until we understand what's going on. Now, you could argue that is an appropriate policy until you get a handle on things. And you might be right on that, but I'll just make the case that I remember a year ago when Donald Trump tried to say the same thing about China and everything else, that we called him racist for doing the same thing as well, too. But nevertheless, he just showed new case, don't understand, lock it down until we figure out. That is their instinct as to what they're going to do. They never consider, well, what about the stress that the lockdowns or the restrictions impose on people? Look, I've read the studies like you. The number of suicides is up. Despair is up. Drug use is up as well, too. It's been very difficult for a lot of people, these lockdowns. Does that ever get considered? Oh, right. When we put in lockdowns and restrictions, that people are going to lose their jobs and they're going to get very unhappy and it's going to put a lot of pressure and stress on them. And that could lead to drug use or suicide. No, never gets considered. So they never consider the cost of their programs. They just consider the optics to their voters is all they seem to really care about.
Very well said. Very well said.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
So then 15, I hope I'm wrong about the U.S. case trend. I hope I'm wrong about the coming political response. Well, I think it's a matter of probabilities, and I think there's a very good argument here why the probabilities are high that we do see this come to fruition. But then you say, but watching this unfold the last 22 months makes me fear I'm not. Yeah, there you go.
Yep. Right, exactly. And, you know, and if you look to where the cases are coming from, look, we heard the word Omicron, no more travel from Africa. There's 260,000, 250,000 cases a day being discovered in Europe. Last I checked, there's no restriction about getting on a plane and going to Paris right now. Or coming from there, going back and forth between the two. And yet that's why I think that the cases, there's so much travel and there's so much interaction between Europe and the United States that when one gets a big case boost, the other follows. Now, sometimes it's Europe that leads, sometimes it's us that leads, but when one goes, the other typically follows. And if that's what we're going to see throughout the month of December is rising cases, especially with winter and we're inside, you know, breathing recycled air, we're going to continue to see cases rising through the month. And what you're going to hear is you're going to hear the language get more strident, the calls get more draconian as cases continue to go up. And that's what I'm really, really worried about in terms, and then the restrictions are going to come, and they're going to come in a big way. Look, the economic center of the universe right now for the United States might be the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. And that is a very blue area. And that is area that will historically slap on a lot of restrictions if we see case counts start to rise quite a bit. And what we really need is we really need a lot of people to congregate in the port called working at the port. And we need a lot more truck drivers willing to drive to the port as well too. But if we're going to tell everybody, oh no, it's too dangerous to go out to dinner with your wife, but I expect you at the port tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, that just isn't going to fly. So, you know, in terms of consistency in everybody's head right here. So we'll have to see where it goes. I hope I'm wrong in the case counts. Something causes it to be different. I hope that there's a little bit more of a measured response. But what I've saw from Oregon and what I've saw from de Blasio in the last couple of days is really worrisome, because we really haven't gotten to that big trajectory of cases to really get them to be very strident on what they want to do in terms of restrictions.
Like we've seen in Europe. Yep.
Yes, exactly. And look, the other thing you're seeing in Europe, which gets very little coverage, is there is a number of protests in Europe about these lockdowns. Some of them, like in the Scandinavian countries and in Austria, have turned violent. There are even in countries that are more progressive, like Spain and like Italy, you've started to see protests. But you're seeing these protests everywhere. You're also starting to see the protests start to arrive now in New Zealand and in Australia as well, too. So that is the other side of the equation that you don't hear much about right now, but it's happening.
Yeah. All right, Jim, have you got a couple more minutes to take some calls?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. Caller, what is your name?
Hey, how are you? It's Charles.
Hey, I'm in Charles. Colorado. I'm well, thanks. You're on with Jim Bianco.
How you doing? Hey, let's see. I was going to ask a political question, but then I realized we're on YouTube. So maybe I should not do that. What about the I just had the question in my head.
Where are you?
You know what? You
have to go.
Yeah, it looks like you're growing your own food there. That's pretty cool.
Is that food or is that
maybe
cannabis?
Jim and I should be asking you the questions.
No, that's a hoop house. And we're in a high desert growing food in a hoop house because out here it's about the only way you can do it on an industrial scale.
Okay.
Wow.
So, darn it. I had a valid question that would be poignant to everyone, and now I can't think of it to save my life.
No problem.
What kind of
no
food
problem.
You're growing?
Carrots, there's cabbage, there's no cabbage right now, sorry, that's a couple months ago. That's kale, spinach, carrots. I do the tomatoes and the cucumbers in the right season. I'm actually a volunteer here. All right. And I still haven't thought of my question, so I guess I'll let you guys go. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for calling in. All right. We have another one, Josh. Hi. Caller, what's your name?
Hey. Hi. I'm Jonathan. Nice to meet y'all.
Hi, Jonathan. What's your question for Jim?
Well, it's more of, what he mentioned earlier with how the seasons vary depending on, the cases and all that. So do you guys think that has to do anything with being vitamin D deficient? Because that has a lot to do with our immune system and how we basically process all the stuff that goes in our body and how we basically fight off everything.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of variables right there. But I think the main variable is what Jim was saying. Because in Florida, as an example, you'd have a ton of vitamin D, although they wouldn't be getting the vitamin D if they're in their house. So maybe it's a chicken or the egg thing. Jim, do you have a view on that?
Yeah, well, first of all, getting sun and getting some vitamin D by getting a little color in your skin is never, ever a bad thing. So, you know, but I do think that does definitely help. But I do think that being outside it's harder for me to expel, you know, to you because it just dissipates in the wind and in the air. And you tend to be more naturally social distant when you're outside, you're doing activities and you're not standing within 3 feet of another person most of the time outside. And the reason I say that is because all of the studies have looked at where do people think that transmission has taken place. The high percentage of it is indoors.
Even de Blasio in that comment that he made the other day said he probably didn't mean to say this, but he's like, he admitted while we're going into winter, admitting right. that does have something to do with it. So maybe these lockdowns and everything, maybe that's not the silver bullet. Maybe it has something to do with things outside of our control.
Right. And when we go into winter, we're inside. And when we're inside, we tend to, you know, people per square meter or something tends to be more dense. We tend to be more dense. And mm-hmm. that's when you see the cases, rise quite a bit. So outside is definitely, you know, the number of transmissions that you could come up with for people being outside has been very, very low. But inside, it's a different story altogether. So that's why, like I said, in the summer, when it's oppressively hot and everybody's seeking air conditioning, you see the South cases in the South go up. In the North, when it's cold and everybody's looking for heat and they go inside, you see the cases go up in the North.
Yeah. Jim, what would be your prediction for the CPI, just the way the government measures it here? I think we're at 6.2, 6.4% right now. What do you see that doing going into 2022?
So you're right. CPI is 6.2% on a year-over-year basis, 4% if you take out food and energy, you know, the so-called core numbers. Most likely, I think those numbers are going to go up. And the biggest reason I think they're going to go up is owner's equivalent rent. Now, that is a fancy term for how does the government calculate housing inflation? They do this thing where if you had your house and you rented it, what would you get for it in terms of rent? And they put together this mathematical algorithm to try and estimate what that is. It's a very slow-moving algorithm. And we know from our understanding of how the algorithm is put together that number is going to keep going up for the next 3 to 6 months. And that's a third of inflation right there. And so the statistic is going to probably keep going up. But more to the point, I think what's important to understand about inflation is not how high does it peak at. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next month or two, we might see a 7 handle on it. But how fast does it fall and where does it fall to? And I think the second half of 2022, we're going to say, oh, look, inflation is falling. Yeah, it is. But it's at 4. It's at the high 3s. It's not going back to the low 2s. That's too high a number because what we'll find is wages are going to be increasing at less of a rate than inflation. And I know that we play this absolute game. Hey, this is good. And, you know, you'll see a lot of people say inflation is good because workers are getting a raise. Okay, they are getting a raise. But prices are rising faster than the raise they get. So relatively, it's not helping them. And if we don't get the inflation rate down next year and it just falls to the 4s or 3s, we're still not going to be helping them next year. That's what makes inflation so dangerous for the economy.
Yeah, Jim, what happens if we get this big spike in cases, like you're saying, and the politicians come out, the panicky politicians, and they do these lockdowns, these mandates, which really crush the economy, and we see a downturn in the stock market, say going to a bear market down over 20% in a disorderly fashion, while at the same time, the CPI is headed towards 7, maybe 8%. What does Jerome Powell do?
That's a good question, because what you've introduced in your question is a variable we haven't seen. And that is that since 2008, when the Fed has been doing quantitative easing, it's always been an environment where inflation has not been an issue.
Right.
So if they print money, if they stimulate hard, it is a positive for financial assets, both stocks and bonds, because the bond market doesn't have to worry about inflation. But now, for the first time in the 13 years they've done it, if we get into a position where the inflation story is a problem, if you start stimulating to try and save the stock market, the bond market is probably going to have a problem. And let me
not even stimulating, but just don't do those rate hikes that, correct me if I'm wrong, are probably baked into the market at this point in time.
Right. You know, there's three rate hikes baked in for 2022, almost four at this point is baked in as well, too. If I was to give you a nuance about it, and I know very few people look at it, short-term interest rates, the two-year yield, and those that are less, those rates are going straight up right now. And really, what is the message that market is telling us? Fed's going to get really aggressive. It's going to get very, very aggressive in hiking and hiking and hiking. Okay, well, then why aren't long-term interest rates, the 10-year and 30-year interest rates, going up? Because the Fed's going to fight inflation and maybe overdo it and kill the economy. And that's why the yield curve, the difference between long and short rates, has been flattening so hard right now and doing it in an unusual way. Normally, the yield curve moves both those short and long ends move up together and down together. But the speed at which they move flattens or steepens the curve. Mm. Now you've got short rates going up and long rates going down, at least in the bigger picture. I know not today, but in the bigger picture, that's what's been happening. That's very rare to see that move in opposite directions. So to me, the message of the market is Fed's going to fight inflation aggressively. It might be successful or it might kill the economy, to be determined. Be successful in actually killing inflation or maybe killing the economy. That's why I don't think you're seeing long rates rising with this fear of inflation, because they're afraid the Fed's going to go too far or going to be forced to go too far.
Right. What do you think happens to, let's say, CPI, we'll say gold, commodities, stock market, bond market, forget the stock market, because let's say the stock market goes down and then Fed says, okay, we're not going down to 105 billion, or maybe they're at that level. We're not tapering anymore. And those rate hikes that we talked about, now all of a sudden those are off the table. If they're doing this in Q1, next year, do you think the gold skyrockets, Bitcoin skyrockets, commodities skyrocket, or what do you think happens in that
environment? And long-term interest rates skyrocket, too. Let me answer your question generically and then specifically. Generically, that's the question. That's the difference between 2020 and 2008 and the taper tantrum of 2013 is we've got inflation. If the Fed is going to say, the hell with inflation, we got to get the stock market back up, what's the bond market going to do? Why am I, as a bond investor, going to say, why am I owning a 180 30-year bond, 1.8% 30-year bond, if we've got 3 or 4% inflation and no one cares about it? The yield on my bond is not even covering the inflation rate. The relative value of the money holding in that bond loses every year because inflation goes up by more than the income that it throws off. Right. So if they're going to say the hell with worrying about inflation, I'm going to say the hell with your bond and get rid of it as well, too. And you could see the prices on those bonds plunge and the yields go up quite a bit. That's what's different now than 08, 13, the taper tantrum, or 2020. No one talked about we did, but we never really got to see runaway inflation or any inflation. Now we're starting it with inflation and the Fed. Jerome Powell last week already said it's time to retire transitory. So don't tell me this is temporary, because he just said time to retire transitory.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then, I mean, and caller, thank you very much. I'm sorry for keeping you on the line there. No, we appreciate
it. I was listening the whole time. I love this stuff. I actually did want to say one thing. Do you think that what you guys were just talking about had to do with the previous live stream, the stuff you talked about, George? Does that tie in with what he just said about the bond market?
Yeah, absolutely. Where right now you've got the investors saying, okay, I think the economy is so unsound that I would prefer to hold a 10 or 30 year treasury right now than the alternative. And you've got some smart money doing that. But to Jim's point, if the Fed says, okay, now all of a sudden we've got inflation, we're not going to do anything about it, and that we're just going to let it run even hotter than you thought. And therefore, that delta between what they thought they were getting or what they knew they were getting with the interest rate and then what they thought the inflation rate was going to be, if that delta increases, then they're going to go ahead and sell. The long end comes up. And then my next question to Jim would be, okay, if that long end is going up while at the same time the stock market's going down, what does that do to the real economy? Because in my view, the real economy is really really revolves around the stock market and asset bubbles. That's where a large portion of our purchasing power is coming from in aggregate total. So if that stock market is going down, further exacerbating the problems that we have in the economy, while at the same time interest rates go up, that's kind of a double whammy, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely think it is. You know, they could have the risk of undoing what they're trying to do if they get the bond market. You know, I'll use an old phrase that Ed Yardeni coined 40 plus years ago, bond market vigilantes.
Yeah, right.
You know, that the bond, they've been gone for decades, but they might be coming back. You know, that you could have this plan. We're going to print money and we're going to save the stock market. And if the bond market says, well, we're going to leave and watch bond prices plunge and interest rates soar and cause the problems for levered banks and for consumers that borrow money to see that those monthly bills are going to go up, it undoes everything that they're trying to do.
Yeah.
The thing that has allowed them to do quantitative easing for the last 13 years is they can print like crazy without having the bond market riot about it, because there was never inflation. That's the new wrinkle in it now.
Yeah, got it. All right.
I'm waiting, you guys.
Yeah, thank you for your call again. And Jim, I sincerely appreciate your time. That was awesome. For my viewers who want to find out more about what you do, where can they go?
Twitter at Bianco Research, Jim Bianco on LinkedIn, or our website, biancoresearch.com.
Awesome, buddy. Thanks again for your time, and can't wait to talk soon.